the giant thinkers.
Giant thinkers podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. I'm Ram Castillo, and in this podcast, I'm bringing to you top experts from various industries worldwide to learn from their success and to help us become better designers, creatives, and giant thinkers. Hello, Giants. Ram here, founder and host of Giant Thinkers. If this is the first time you're tuning in, thank you so much for being here. This is episode number 71, and today we have someone super special. He's been a top four contestant on MasterChef Australia season 7 in 2015, where at the time he was only 20 years old. And he's the co-founder of multiple family-run restaurants, including Koi Dessert Bar and Dining and Monkey's Corner. He's often been referred to as Sydney's dessert king, but his abilities span well beyond sweets and into the savory. He's been featured multiple times in the Daily Telegraph, The Guardian, Good Food, news.com.au, and Vogue Australia. If you've ever tried his creations, you'll feel his passion for taking people on a journey through taste, texture, and visual theatre. A part of his story I'm excited for you to hear is his humble beginnings, which isn't widely known or told. He immigrated from Indonesia to Sydney with his family when he was just 4 years old. The food and restaurant empire actually started in their family garage, where his mother started operations with only $300 to support them. So through his story, you'll see why he's a firm believer in keeping a firm grip of your dreams. Some of the topics we spoke about include his top three dishes under $30, his advice for those looking to audition for MasterChef, what makes successful family-run businesses, practical business tips he's learned along the way, and his creative process. So if you're thinking about running a creative business or just love cooking and quality food, then this is for you. By the way, if we're not connected already on Instagram, I invite you to reach out via my handle, TheGiantThinker. It's the fastest way to reach me, and I absolutely love hearing from you all and what you thought from each episode. Now, before we dive in, I'd like to share with you very briefly one of my favorite resources, which is Stocksy, and also pass on a generous gift from them, which is a chunky 20% off discount. Stocksy are my image search library of choice. And personally, after over 14 years in the design industry, truth be told, there are hundreds of stock libraries that just don't have the creative quality and creative variety that our work demands. So to save you the hassle, I'm putting Stocksy in front of you, as they've provided me and my peers with extremely high quality, royalty-free stock photography and cinematic video, and their library is getting better and better. So before I plug the 20% off discount and before you hit the fast forward button, please allow me to expand with just 4 points for literally 20 seconds. First, their image library isn't full of cheesy overused assets. Second, they use a highly curated editing approach to carefully select the most useful and authentic photos to include in their collection. Third, their business model differs from traditional stock photography companies. They focus on creative integrity, fair pay, fair profit sharing, and co-ownership for members and artists. Lastly, their website is very easy to use. The searching, filtering, navigating, it's all clear, intuitive, and simple. They even have a drag and drop search feature. If you have an image and want to see a similar image on Stocksy, just drag that image into their website, literally onto the browser that you're on, and Stocksy will populate anything that is related for you to review. They've also launched a search by color feature. Enter a hex code or use their slider to search Stocksy's collection by color. Images start at just $15 USD. And as a listener, you get 20% off. Head to giantthinkers.com/Stocksy. Once again, that's giantthinkers.com/STOCKSY. Use the code GIANTTHINKERS20. That's giantthinkers20. The clickable link is also on this blog post. Alrighty, I hope you enjoy this one. I present to you the always moving, hardworking, creative visionary, Reynold Pernomo. Reynold Pernomo, welcome to the Giant Thinkers podcast, mate. Thank you so much for carving out some time to do this. How are you today?
Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's a pleasure. To those listening, I, as well as my wife and extended family, as we were kind of chatting earlier, and friends, have enjoyed Koi for, I'd say, a solid 3 years.
That's how long we've been here for as well.
Yeah. I remember trying your degustation when you first opened.
It's changed a lot, trust me, it's changed a lot.
Awesome, let's get into a bit of that in a bit. So it's a deep honor to have you on the show. First off, Ray, I have an icebreaker question for you. What would your top three favorite dishes be under $30 from anywhere, a cafe, restaurant, eatery, anywhere in the world?
Easy. Mr. Crackles, one of the, it's a pork roll, the classic, that's one. Pho, every single day, I would definitely go there. I can eat pho every single day.
Any particular place?
No. Any pho place that's
any
good.
Any pho place?
Yeah, anywhere that's good. Okay. It's got to have good chewy noodles. And then last but foremost, I'd say ramen place.
Ramen.
Anything ramen.
Okay.
Yeah, but I prefer like the really fatty or the really creamy ones.
So, I mean, I went to, a lot of listeners would know, to Osaka, Japan for the honeymoon.
Right, nice.
And the ramen was just on another level in Japan, naturally.
Yeah.
A place in Sydney, though. Do you...
A place in Sydney, there's a couple, actually.
Yeah.
Rio is one of them, Ichibandori and Kumshara.
Okay, all right. I'll have to link those up for people to try. No doubt they are keen to try that. So where would you say your expertise lies?
That's hard to say, actually. It's evolved a lot from where I started, from being a creator to becoming, an entrepreneur. I don't know if I would like to use that title, but I mean, it's someone where I still create. Of course, I did a lot of pastry at the start. And then throughout my career in this very short and quick 3 years, it's evolved a lot. So I've done more than, just being in the kitchen and just doing focused on pastry. I now do pretty much the whole thing. And also what we're doing with myself and my brothers, we're kind of expanded in a way, our creativity in outside of food and going into the business kind of perspective of things.
Mm. Would you say, because most people know you as the dessert king, you've been labeled.
Yeah,
how do you feel about that?
I feel a bit awkward, to be honest, because it kind of like pigeonholes me. This is who you are. This is who you're going to be. This is how the public sees you. And I've always wanted to break that image. At the same time, I do hold high respect for it as well. Like I'm proud that, everyone sees me as being Sydney's dessert king. And of course, that's a title to be proud of. At the same time, I don't want it to be just the dessert king.
Yeah. I think we've spoken about this as a theme in a lot of the episodes on the podcast, where people often ask the question, should I go down niche in what I do? Or is it better to be a generalist in a way? Now, what's your kind of point of view on that? I mean, not to say that being a generalist even is something that you can't do extremely well as well. So,
well, I guess if my scenario is a bit different, my dream is not to be the world's best pastry chef, or to, be any of the best pastry chef. I've always, my ultimate dream is actually to have a restaurant that I can envisage that's the complete restaurant. It's not just desserts. It's a focus on, the drinks, the business, the menu. I guess it's something where it's more modern. That's my idea of a restaurant. I guess where I started from is something that's very niche, which is a dessert. And my brothers and I and my mom, we took opportunity, took that opportunity and grew it into a business. But that's not where it's going to end.
Yeah, I mean, you're almost doing that, probably not as large of a scale that you'd like.
Yeah.
I think, you were saying that you're expanding the menu into, and what I've read, the ratio of desserts is getting smaller versus the savory.
Yeah. I mean, the whole business at Koi Dessert Bar, we have the cakes.
Yeah.
That's never going to go away.
Yeah.
And we have the dining upstairs, and that's where I kind of, you know, exercise my creativity in, awesome. In outside of the desserts.
We're going to dive into more of that. But before we do, can you tell us a little about your childhood and how you grew up?
So I moved into Australia and Sydney when I was in 99. So that would be 4 years old at the time, 4 or 5 years old.
How old are you now, by the way?
25.
Right. Love yeah.
it. So a lot has happened. So what happened was, from what I know, 98 in Indonesia, there was a big financial crisis around Asia, but Indonesia hit the hardest.
Mm.
And apparently there's a lot of racial, I guess a lot of pointy fingers and blame going to Indonesia. I guess there was a lot of tension politically, and in a way, it's like a sort of like a civil, not really a civil war. No, no, that's a bit too extreme. But there was a lot of mass killing.
Yeah.
A lot of rape towards the Chinese. And as an Indonesian Chinese, my parents kind of flew away outside and escaped, I guess, Indonesia and built a new opportunity in Australia. They had a lot of businesses. It got burnt down, actually. So we started off from scratch here. I was too young to understand everything until now, actually. And then my mom kind of became this ultimate restaurateur, becoming a dishwasher. So she had to start from the bottom. And then from there, our childhood was quite tough. My brothers were still in Indonesia. I was the only one here.
Right.
So it was mostly my mom and myself and my dad. And what happened was, like, you know, a lot of things happened. My dad partnered up with a restaurateur here. And we didn't know, or they didn't know, that it's an illegal thing to do without a permanent residence. And what happened was the immigration, I guess, officers found out. And then my parents had to go through detention centers. I was still very young at the time. I remember them knocking on the door. And school was quite tough as well. You know, we didn't have much money. My shoes would be 2-3 years, you know, wearing the same shoes. And of course, as a growing kid, you need new shoes almost every year. My socks had holes in them. I remember one time my brother reminding me that, you know, we actually had a small unit in Chatswood and we didn't have any beds. We just slept on the floor, one room, we shared everything.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a tough childhood. And I'd come home, there's no food. My parents, you know, people would say like, oh, you're so lucky, your parents are chefs. That's completely different. As a young kid growing up, having both your parents as chefs and your brothers working, especially the age gap between us is quite different, quite big, like 5-6 years. They're already teens and working already like that. And I'm, you know, 12 years old, 10 years old, I'm still at home. Alone. My mom and dad be working in the kitchen and there's no food at home. So yeah, that's for me. From there, things did, I guess, pan out to be the better. We met a family friend, or who's now a family friend. He's a lawyer, he helped us out. His name is Nigel, and then he basically pulled the whole family out of that dark area. Got us out of the hole. He saved us. And for some reason, he didn't want any fee. He just wanted to help the family. Wow. So that's God's blessing.
100%.
And from there, my mom took that opportunity and, you know, turned it into something where she can, I guess, be proud of. By getting a permanent residency from there, she built a business, which is ArtPlate. Dad would be working in the restaurant still. And ArtPlate is a small, it started very, very small. And I was only starting to get into cooking as well. Macarons, pastry. My mom got into macarons and then she started making them, practicing. I successfully made macarons before she did, but she kept on practicing, made it better.
Wow.
Improved. And then made business out of it. Started supplying cafes. And then this cafe wanted more than just macarons. And she was just working at a steakhouse at the time. When she left, she opened up ArtPlate, this small patisserie. So she was not a pastry chef, self-taught. She just got really into it. And then started making tiramisu, black forest cakes, Swiss rolls. And it just grew. It was all back in the garage, small garage that we had at home. I was still at school. I went to uni at the time. After 2 years or so, it grew even more. The demand got higher. And I think I was about 20 years old. I was still studying. I would help my mom every now and then doing deliveries. There's about 40 stores, 50 stores. And yeah, that's from there, I guess that's the very start of Koi. The very start. So I'd say my mom is the core of everything. I was studying nutrition at the time because, of course, my parents had this rough history of hospitality and they didn't want me to go follow that path. My brothers did. For me, okay, you know, if I can't, you know, be in the kitchen and cook, I'll keep it as my hobby, maybe open a restaurant later down the years. For now, something I can do with food and something I love as well is fitness, so nutrition. But I didn't do too well. My ATAR was horrible. I didn't get good marks in uni as well. It's just, I don't know, it wasn't something that I loved doing. And if I don't love doing it, I would despise it. Every day would be, you drag yourself. You don't pull the effort. You don't have the heart for it. You don't focus. You know, if you don't focus, then you're not going to go anywhere. And then at that moment, you know, I took that opportunity. I guess my girlfriend at the time, she pushed me to go to MasterChef. I didn't want to, but, you know, she made me say, okay, you know what, I'll give it a try. See how it goes. And throughout my, you know, history of keeping cooking as a hobby, became to a passion. And that's how it all started.
Yeah. Mate, that's full on. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
There's a lot of things that people don't know, but people think that, you know, we opened up Koi because we had deep pockets and stuff like that. No, complete opposite. We had to create, I guess, you know, start from somewhere, and that was from somewhere with almost little to nothing.
So there's a few things, I guess, that's running through my mind. One is that it's important for people to really understand the origin is before us. Our parents, our grandparents, because I believe your grandma was even a cook, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. So I think all of this is important, that people don't arrive at where they are without a lot of hard work and sacrifice. And to some degree, I can certainly relate with my parents migrating from the Philippines as well. And I think the first thing that comes to mind out of all that part of your life is, would you change anything different because of the character that it has built you to be? Is probably a very resilient, motivated, driven to have a better life for maybe your generation.
For me, I mean, like, when it comes to growing up, you don't really realize the things that's right there in front of you. Mm. If I was to change anything, I'd say the young me, I would definitely help my mom. I was too selfish at the time, you know. I don't know why. It's one of those days, you know, I was only 17, 16, 18. At those times, you know, you kind of feel like everything, the whole world revolves around you. You know, something goes wrong, you've got the end of the world. So I was still learning, I was still growing. So I guess if that's the only one thing I would change, help my mom. At the same time, though, we would never be where we are here today. If I did help my mom, that's the thing. And to be a master chef, you got to be an amateur, and I was at the time. So yeah. So who knows? The path may be different. It could be worse. It could have been better. Yeah, never know.
What was the business that your mom started? What was that called?
Called Art Plate.
Art Plate. Is that open still?
So Art Plate, what we've done is we separated the companies. We've got Koi Dessert Bar. We've got Art Plate. Art Plate is basically
Art Plate.
Yeah,
got it.
So that is. The one is our production kitchen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's a whole, it's an intricate kind
it's
of
a whole
system.
Ecosystem there.
Yeah.
So let me get this right. Your mom was cooking and making experimental desserts effectively at her home.
She was practicing with how to create macarons.
Macarons.
Yeah.
And then found a store?
No. Started in the garage.
Started in the garage?
Yeah.
And then it grew to 40 stores. So what happened there?
No, not the 40 stores. So what happened was it's from the garage. We started to supply
to these cafes. To 40 yeah. plus stores.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then from the little garage, we moved over to Concord. A small, hot kitchen.
Yeah.
It's a bit bigger. It wasn't any better. But it was a kitchen. And actually...
To produce everything.
Yeah, to produce everything. Yeah. We did that with our first store of Koi Dessert Bar for about a year. And then when it did so well, my brothers and I, we built a kitchen for her, a dream kitchen.
Wow.
And that is Koi Dessert Kitchen in Ryde today.
That's some very important information. All right, so being born into a family of cooks, as we've just uncovered, your mum, your grandmother, your father, even one of your two brothers as well, Arnold, being a judge on MasterChef Indonesia, was being a chef the inevitable path for you, or were you ever at a crossroads to pursue another calling?
I knew at the time, when I was 14, when I got into cooking, being a chef was not easy. My mom had a lot of cookbooks around, Michelin star chefs with these cookbooks. And the one thing I would always go to is read the biography. How did they become the person they are today? And from what I've read everything, it's not an easy journey. It's a very tough journey. There's a lot of sacrifice. Your time, your time is so precious because, you know, your health, family, relationships and everything. You gotta sacrifice all that. And the amount of passion and drive that they have, you know, it drove me. I wanted to be like them. It wasn't, actually, people thought that I learned from my mom or my parents, like, pushed me to be a chef. It's not a glorified, it wasn't glorified back then. It's not really an amazing career. It's a low pay, it's high intense laborious hours, but I just have this urge of creativity. I had to create something, and I loved creating food. And I guess it's, even if my parents pushed me away to not be a chef, I think it's all in the blood. We all know how to cook. My auntie as well, she knows how to bake really well, really good. Before, she was in the corporate industry, and then now we're going to open up a cafe together because her passion is in baking, and I think it just runs in the family. It's in our blood. And yeah, it is. I guess it is inevitable. But same time, it's like, wouldn't change it.
Yeah. And what you just kind of implied, it still requires work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The whole thing about.
But I don't despise it. I love it.
Yeah.
Some days I do, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Reminds me of that quote, hard work trumps talent when talent refuses to work hard. So you can be exposed to that environment, giving you a little bit of a head start or whatever, you know, with like mentors. You surround yourself with people, you know, there's this Jim Rohn quote, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So you're the average of your mom, your dad, your brothers, your aunties, your grandma, all cooking.
So. And I guess when it comes to, you know, the career of, you know, following a chef's footsteps, or any career actually, I'm not sure where I read this or heard this from, and I completely agree with it. Passion is not enough. Just because you have a passion for something doesn't mean it's not going to be enough for you to get to where you want to be, to succeed. Because passion actually comes and goes, and it does. As much as I'm passionate with food, there are days where I don't like it. I hate it, you know, because it's just one of those days where you just have a bad day, you know. Like, a bad day at work is inevitable. It always happens. But the only thing, I guess, that should drive your passion, like, you know, is your dream. That should drive your career, not just the passion. It's just, I guess, one of many gears.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
It's like if more information and passion was the answer, then everyone would be doctors walking around with six-pack abs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you still need to go through the grind.
Yeah.
So now MasterChef Australia is on season 11.
Yeah, yeah.
You were on season 7. 2015.
Time flies.
4 years ago,
time
mate.
Time flies away.
Can you recall the period of time between thinking about, just thinking about applying for MasterChef and then actually going through the motions and actually just getting to the top 24 point? Can you just describe that for people? Because more and more people want to join the show.
Yeah.
Some people are still contemplating. So how did you make,
so how was,
you know,
that?
How was that experience?
I was 20 years old, the application is opened, and I've always had this plan. I'll be a nutritionist, I'll make some money, and then I'll open a restaurant. Well, worst experience in that. That's my plan, that's my idea. It's what my parents wanted me to go through. You know, just do cooking as a side hobby. It's like, okay, sure, I'll give that a try. So my end goal was always to be a chef. But at the same time, me looking at this MasterChef application, I was like, I always knew in the back of my mind, and I've always thought about it still, if I was to go on the show, I'm going to be looked down in the hospitality industry. You will, because it still happens today.
Why is that? Sorry, we're getting into this a bit earlier than I thought, but we'll get into that a bit later. Okay.
There is that facade. A facade is like of, you know, you're just an amateur cook. It's just cheating in a way, right? Mm-hmm. If I apply, I'm going to go through that road, and I'm going to have to suck it up and, you know, accept it. And if I don't, I'll grind out the hours and I'll gain the respect. But you get zero exposure, and it's the hardest way out. It is. So that was going through my mind at the time. But at the same time, you know what? I haven't worked in the kitchen at all, so I don't know. I'm still young. And you know what? Screw it. I'll just give it a go. Because we have a couple of exchange students from overseas who are in Le Cordon Bleu.
Wow.
I was studying in Western Sydney University. And, you know, they would come to me for advice because they had seen me cook as a hobby quite a lot.
Right.
And sometimes it's not, you know, better than them sometimes. But, yeah, so I thought, okay, maybe I can be a chef. But at the same time, it's like, okay, when I applied for it, just give it a go. I'll take my experience with me that I've learned on my own. And at the same time, I was kind of proud of that. This is all self-taught. Mm. This is what I've learned all on my own. So,
okay.
Yeah. It was kind of scary. So I was like, do I sacrifice this and that? Because my parents were in the industry and I respect the industry so much.
It was a lot of, I just often wonder how many people overthink to the point of not making a decision, and not making a decision is a decision in itself.
Because I thought too far ahead before it actually even happened.
Right. But it's so common. I've definitely gone through that. I'm sure the listeners have too, where you're at the crossroads and you go, here's what my folks want to do. I kind of don't mind that idea. It's safe. It's secure. Yeah, I can. I'm somewhat excited by it. But then there comes something like MasterChef, which, I mean, without a doubt, it's impacted you. It wouldn't, you know, I don't really know what another fitting word, but it's impacted the way.
It changed my fate, actually.
Yeah.
Like the whole timeline, I knew what was going to happen. I'm going to be this, and have this. And then it just completely changes. It was a window of opportunity, and you took that path to go a different way.
How did you continue on in the competition without self-sabotaging yourself?
What do you mean by that?
Like when you start getting to the top 10 and then the top 5, you made it to the top 4.
Oh man, I was a very introverted person.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm naturally an introverted person. I don't know. There's very few people I can socialize with.
Yeah.
So I guess in the house, as much as I get along with every few people here and there, I enjoy my time alone.
Yeah.
So I'd be sleeping a lot. If you ask like my season, who slept a lot? I slept a lot. I didn't bother stressing too much.
Yeah, okay.
Until it happens, yeah, it gets stressful, of course. But they would be cooking in the house, trying to compete against each other in the house.
Right. Is that how it is?
Yeah, try to show off a little bit, show off your skills. No, this is what I can do.
Flex the
exactly.
Bit of intimidation.
Yes, exactly. And my mentality.
Meanwhile, there you are in the
sleeping in the away,
get
watching TV, watching
different
movies.
Different strategy there.
The thing is, if you're confident in your skill and you know what you're doing,
yeah,
and you know you have all the skills back in your head. Mm. You know you're confident within everything. You don't need to show it off and practice it over and over again, unless you're going to practice something new. The guys are cooking everything that they already knew. Mm. Just trying to show it off. Right. There's a new technique I learned. I'm just there reading my books, watching TV, going to sleep. Yeah. I just kind of have this mentality. It's like, I don't need to practice that something I already know.
Got it. Love it. Any advice for those looking to one day audition for MasterChef?
I guess if you're willing to sacrifice what you have now to be and stick to your dream that you have originally, go for it. Go for it, for sure. But if you say one thing, you go on the show, your ego gets big, it does, and you go to a different pathway. And I see a lot of them do that. They say they want to go in the kitchen, be a chef. Go be a chef, go in the kitchen, give it a try.
Mm.
It changes your perspective of it. before you apply, maybe go a week in the kitchen, in a real restaurant, give it a try, see how it goes. Is this something you want to do? Is this something that you want to sacrifice what you have now for that?
It's a good
to handle with food. So it's the reality of it, because the show is a show, and a show is there to entertain us and us as viewers. It's not what we see is not what actually happens all the time, and it's not the real world. It's the MasterChef world. It's a bubble. Once you step out of it, you hit reality, and reality is not always pretty.
Mate, that you've nailed that advice. Just spend a week in what you think could be a good job or change or whatever, and if you still like it after a full-on week, that's still better than going into a competition, never having cooked sort of commercially before.
You can be honest as well. You know, I want to be there because I want exposure, or I want to be in the media. Mm. I want to have a TV show. I want to have a cookbook. Go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it. Just be honest with and be true to yourself. As in, like, don't say you want to have a cafe, you want to be a chef, and you go on the show. Mm. Because there are so many ways that you can be a chef and have a cafe without having to go on the show.
Mm.
There's whole different pathways.
Yeah. Now, we were going to talk about something else quite juicy, weren't we?
The industry's, hospitality industry, looking into MasterChef.
Yeah, tell me about that. We can't go past not talking about that.
Oh, there's a lot of...
Look, it is the truth.
Like, it is.
Because we were talking off air about musicians too, you know, thinking about going on
X Factor,
The Voice, or whatever. I mean, open forum, mate, like...
So before I got on, I got accepted on the show, and before the top 24 started, we had a little gap of a month.
All right.
And I wanted to kind of stage. We call it stage. Mm. Working for free or work experience in a restaurant. And this
is all of you do that.
Some did, some didn't.
Okay.
Just give it a try.
Right.
Gain some knowledge while you can. And I tried to get into a restaurant the chef that I respected most, one of the chefs I respected. My mom's friend, and I told him what happened. You know, I'm going to be on the show. I would like to learn a little bit, gain some experience and some insight and some advice.
Bit of a boot camp.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Yeah. Then he kind of laughed it off. He says, you know, what's the point of you going on the show? It's kind of a joke. You want to be chefs. And then end of the conversation, he kind of stood up and said, good luck for you, buddy. And then here's a book. Yeah, like his cookbook. Yeah, that's good.
Whoa.
I was like, okay, well, I just want to work, for a week. That's all I wanted. And so that kind of hurt a little bit. I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'll just do what I keep doing. It's just, teaching myself. And in the industry, it makes sense. It really does. Because I see this, after 3 years now, working in the business and industry, I can see why. They grind those hours to get to where they are today. And those guys didn't go through a TV show. They work and bust their ass off. Creativity is not easy.
Mm.
Being an actual professional chef, creating a dish, hatted chefs, non-hatted chefs, man, they work really hard. They really do.
And also, the cost to make it.
Yeah, exactly.
And replicate it. Is it feasible?
If you're a chef owner, that comes to mind. If you're just a chef, a creator, and you have an investor or something like that, sure, you just keep creating.
Yeah.
But I mean, in a way, MasterChef is instant exposure. Mm. People buy into the story. That's what it is there for. It's for these contestants to kind of tell their story and why they're passionate about the food.
Mate, I got sucked into it again last night. I was getting emotional.
There you go.
And
there
I was
go.
Like, just the look.
And it is. It is emotional. It is.
It's that moment where it's like, I was watching, I forgot his name, but he was like well behind cooking with Curtis Stone. And
but it's like, again, you got to ask that question. It's like, is this, you got to be true to yourself. Is this something that you want to do? Mm. And if it is, you got to earn that place after you finish the show. There are a few contestants actually that, Kylie Miller, for example, she went to work in Mugga Ritz, now at Attica. Andy Allen's, Three Blue Ducks in Rosebery. There's another guy, I forgot his name. He's got an Italian restaurant in South Australia. And another person, contestant from my season, Rose, she's got a cafe in South Australia as well. They're grinding the hours.
Yeah.
You know, they're working hard.
Mate.
But there's very few of them.
I bartended, I don't know if people know this, I bartended in Bavarian Beer Cafe for 4.5 years while I was studying. And then I merged into becoming a junior designer and I was working on weekends. And the chefs were working absurd hours.
Yeah, there are those chefs that are just there for work because there's not really much else to do.
Yeah.
And there are those chefs that create and work. And another one, create, work, and also operate, as in like being an owner. That's the trio of that one is bloody hard.
So that's a perfect sort of entry point into my next question, which was going to be as a co-founder of Koi with your brothers and your mum, and I'm sure many, many others, Koi having, as in many others, help you operate. Koi having three locations, all in Sydney at the moment, Chippendale, Ryde, Macquarie, and also fairly recently opening a totally new establishment called Monkey's Corner, a bar for inventive and playfully creative drinks paired with modern Japanese food. How do you open and operate four businesses at the age of 25?
Well, obviously I can't do it by myself. So how it all works is...
Because I mean, people don't probably know.
Yeah, no, they don't. You know? They don't. So how it all works, we transformed Art Plate, my mum's business, we combine all our brains together. Mm. My mom, she loves cakes. I don't like to bake. Well, I probably got to change that though. For me, I like, I guess, the fine dining style of things.
Okay.
Arnold likes to cook. And he doesn't like, I guess, he doesn't like my style of cooking. It's too pretentious, he says. It's too fiddly. It's like, no need, you know, you got to just like, just honest food. And Ronald, he bartends, he makes coffee, and he can also do macarons. Because he took over Art Plate for a little bit, because my mom had to get an operation. I was still studying. And he jumped in to kind of, you know, take over my mom's business.
Who's the oldest?
Ronald.
Ronald. And then Arnold.
And then me. And then you. Yeah, and get mixed up.
Okay.
And he started to learn how to operate the business, admin work and everything. So you combine everything together. Actually, if you put us in a room and we separate the lines and we have our little stations, it works. Wow. We don't step over, you know, I don't go over to Ronald's side and try and make coffee and try to, you know, bartend. No, I can't do that. That's what he's good at. And he's good at, you know, operating the business and the admin work. I'm bad with numbers. I'm bad with, I guess, my academic skills wasn't great. And he's a lot, you know, he's the oldest, he's wiser. My mom, she loves to bake. She loves to create cakes. I don't like to bake. I like my kind of, you know, I'm pastry area. And Arnold,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Arnold, he loves his honest food, and so he created Monkey. This is what happened. So of course we're all integrated into each other, and of same time we all come together almost every week to kind of input all our brains together and kind of input our creativity. This is what we should do, business direction, and this is how I guess it's kind of healthy for us.
Okay,
there are disagreements, of course, and I guess for the first couple of years it was quite intense. We fought a lot, but we've matured a lot as well. And those fights were necessary.
Mm.
You know, it's something where you don't just keep and blow up.
Mm.
At least we express ourselves. Yep. And we're family. Whatever happens, we'll come back.
Mm.
Well, if the bond's strong. there's a lot of family and business that doesn't mix well and they separate. But for us, I'd say we kind of do our best in what we're sitting in. But we all have the one goal.
Mm.
We focus and we listen to each other. My mom, I don't create the cakes, but she creates the cakes from my dishes. I create dishes from her cakes and back and forth, back and forth. So there's like, say, you have 100 cakes. Let's say 30 of them are mine. Because you know, I put the input, the creativity, the design, and then another 30 would be from all of us. We put, I guess, our ideas together and make it happen.
So I think it's fair to say that lots of people have a fair amount of ideas.
Yeah.
So how and who decides what makes some of those ideas?
Oh, we just, like I said, we have an idea and like, so we have a board meeting.
Making it on the plate, for example, yeah.
We have a board meeting and it's like, you know, let's do this you know, for this menu, or let's do this for a cake. And let's say yes, we say no. We all agree on
that. Vote.
Yeah, pretty much.
So,
pretty much. There are some times where we have to like draw the line. I'll do what I do and you do what you do. And you know, let me take care of this. Because if someone kind of steps over the line, it gets messy.
Okay, how do you handle that?
Well, we fight. You can't help it. You know, someone crosses the line, you fight. You know, you're in my territory.
Yeah,
we're all bosses. There's what? My auntie now as well, my brother, my mom, myself, my other brother. There's five of us.
Yeah.
We're all bosses of our own, right? Imagine that, having all that big ego.
You've got your own departments, yeah.
Yeah. All that ego, we're bosses of ourselves, and we get together and we get told by another person what to do. You'd be like, hey.
Yeah.
But we've kind of matured out of that. We've, you know, kind of accepted, you know, we all agree in what direction we want to go.
Mm.
And that's how we've been able to run, you know, four businesses at the moment.
Far out.
Another one will be coming up soon as well.
Another one?
Yeah.
It's top secret?
No, not really. We'll let you guys know some pretty soon.
Okay. So what are some practical business 101 tips that come to your mind that maybe you feel strongly about now, looking back in hindsight? You've had a fair amount of experience running your own businesses now. Going through this real world experience after MasterChef, you know, what are some tough lessons perhaps that you've learned so far along the way? Maybe that others can...
One of which, I'm not going to go into details for this one because I don't think it's time to kind of let it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I will go over it very, I guess, touch base a little bit. We kept quiet about this and not many people know about it either. We've actually had one other partner. It was three of us. So Arnold wasn't originally involved.
Mm.
It was myself, business partner, my brother. And my mom, of course, with Artplate, and we just joined everything together. My brother Arnold came in halfway through because what happened was we had a falling out with the partner. So I'd say for me, a tip would be finding the right partner and making sure you and the partner have the same goal. And again, why the business works so well is because we're staying in our own lanes.
Mm.
We're not crossing each other. And the moment we do, that's where things go. It goes wrong. It really does. And one person wants to go this way, you want to go this way. If there's no agreement or any compromise, it's really going to tear apart the business.
Mm.
And it did for a little bit. Until we fixed everything up, we put everything together, this is what we're going to do. So that's one advice.
That's big. Yeah.
I mean, it happens. Mm. It really does happen. Not just myself, my friends, other people. They partner up with someone and it just doesn't work.
Doesn't work out.
It's a relationship.
100%. Yeah.
You got to find the right person. You really do.
Yeah, we've had many guests on the show bring up similar points. You know, we won't unpack it fully now, but I mean, I'm so glad you brought that up because it's essentially having a super candid, honest conversation about what does the future look like to you?
Mm.
Is that in line with what I think that the future looks like for me with this business?
But even at the same time, it's like, even if you have the same idea, the same, you know, goals, things happen and things change along the way. You can't help it. You know, people change. You know, I'm not the same person I was 3 years ago, let alone 5 years ago. If I was, you know, if I was to ask myself, what are you going to do in the next 5 years? I'm not going to know.
Mm.
You know, you probably thought you did, but a lot can happen in just 1 year.
Well, I guess it's also about having the mental capacity to acknowledge that change will happen.
Yeah.
Whether we want it or not.
Yeah.
Acknowledge that it's coming. Yeah, it's consistent.
But the moment someone, like, even if people change, but the moment there's still a string that's holding it together, it's compromise.
Mm.
The moment that gets broken, well, you know, there's a compromise, you go your separate ways.
Mate, that's good advice.
Another advice I'd say is, like, you know, when the business is doing really well, fix the things that you need to fix.
Mm.
So when it comes to the rainy days, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the other one.
Do you have an example?
Oh, like, for example, would be like, let's see. I'm not sure, actually. Yeah.
No, it's probably like...
Small things, actually.
Process stuff as well, or systems that might...
Yeah.
Can need
it's
a
small
bit
things,
yeah.
Like, say, oh, we should have did that paint job when we were busy.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. So let's talk about branding just for a little bit. From creating to building to evolving a brand, all of this really ties in. KOI stands for Kids of Ike.
Ika.
Yeah,
it's my mum.
It's your mum.
Yeah.
Sorry, my apologies.
That's all good.
Ika. Kids of Ika. Love it. Monkey's Corner is derived from the intelligent, playful, and mischievous character of a monkey. How has your experience been building brands from scratch, brands with personality, with values, and with a community? Because you've got some diehard fans, man. You know, around the brand. You know?
I'd say it's the story. Hmm. Monkey's Corner is not just that, but Monkey's Corner is, I'd say, the focus is my brother's Arnold. Hmm. It's his focus on that one. It's his little baby. And myself and the family, we're just there to support that. You know, we help operate as well. He's busy being a celebrity in Indo. So
massive celebrity.
Yeah, he's killing it now. So jeez. We help him as well. We help his dream grow. It was dead for almost a year.
Really?
My brother and I were the only customers.
What was dead?
Like Monkey's Corner.
Really?
It was completely Mate, quiet.
My wife and I tried to get a booking. We can't.
Yeah. Now it's like that. We're doing like 100 to 200 a day.
Yeah.
It's insane. And it's, you know, it's humbling as well. So how we built that, Monkey is because my brother Arnold, he used to get called Monyet, which means monkey in Indonesia. Mom would call him Monyet a lot. And he's known as the Monyet in the family, the monkey.
Love it.
It's cheeky. And Kids of Ika, I guess, you know, it's my brothers and I, and we complete the whole package.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's just building the story of our family and turning it into reality.
Yeah. I'd love to chat about your creative process, specifically with your desserts, for example. For those that follow you online, we can, you know, we get a super sort of unfiltered glimpse at some of your experimentation. Your desserts, they are no joke, some of the most innovative, immersive, and unique creations I've personally ever had. And it's not just food, it's part art, part theater, part science. What inspires you to create these memorable original desserts?
It's kind of hard to say because...
Like, how do you take an idea? Where does it, you know?
Let's say you can go the typical road. I use a backbone. So my next menu that I want to do for my desserts is monochrome. So I want to have desserts with an exact color. But at the same time, I don't want it to just be like, if a dessert is just white, I don't want everything to just be white. I want to be, have a little surprise there. People will think it's going to be all white. They crack something open, it's red. It's the unexpectedness of it. Mm. So a little backbone, for example, colors, and then also a surprise involved and something that's interactive. That's how I find it's a bit more fun.
That's the brief, yeah.
Yeah, it's
for
fun.
Your creations.
So the backbone can be colors. It can be childhood. It can be, for example, you know, a TV show or music. Whatever it is, something from the book, you know, like Alice in Wonderland, for example, a typical one everyone would use. It's just as long as there's a backbone they can follow. And though at the moment, like, I've probably hit a lot of roadblocks.
Really?
Creativity is not easy.
Yeah.
Especially that you want to try create something new. That's the hardest part.
And I say really not in that a shocking sort of thing, but more in a, like, it's good for people to know.
Mm.
Because...
Man, it is hard.
Yeah.
There's some days where, actually some months that I would have no idea what I want to do for the next menu. And it's just taking forever to come along. And it just pops in my head when I'm driving or in the shower, just out of nowhere. It's like, oh, this would be great.
Has there been a consistent pattern that you've found that breaks that dry spell? Like, is it traveling? Is it changing the route that you go? Is it talking to someone new?
Traveling and eating out to different... So let's say I go to different restaurants, you get a lot of ideas, inspiration, but at the same time, I don't agree with that. You can take it in as a different perspective of an ingredient or food concept from another person, but don't take that on board.
Mm.
Not 100%
at least. Don't take it verbatim like, oh, this is how they made that thing, so I'm going to copy that.
It's not you.
Yeah.
I've kind of stayed away a lot from that, and this is my challenge I've set myself personally. Let's get to where I want to be. And be successful at it on my own.
Mm.
A bit selfish, but it's a challenge that I've set for myself. You know, I don't work in, I haven't been a restaurant, this and that.
Yeah.
I don't read cookbooks anymore.
You went straight from MasterChef to
Koi. And it's all, well, I did work a little bit for 3 months at Gastropark.
I mean, that's not much though.
Yeah, it's not much.
Yeah.
Besides that, I kind of, and then I started to look at cookbooks, and then I started to realize and discover, I stopped looking at cookbooks.
Wow.
You know, you realize that as a chef or as a cook, you can actually make anything you want.
Totally.
You just need to add flavors to it, right? Yeah. And then when you're confident in your skill, you're confident in what you do, you start to create your own style. And that's what I've done recently. And I've always wanted to be successful at it by being self-taught.
Mm.
So that's for me, at least. So my creative process, it's It's really hard to pinpoint. It really is, because I don't know how it works as well. I really don't. There are some times where I create a dish.
Yeah.
I think it's going to taste good. I don't eat it. I get someone else to try it.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you think? And then, I don't know, I only just tasted the menu, my order menu that I'm about to change. It's yesterday. It's been there for like 2 months.
Wow.
So yeah, it takes a while.
Very cool. So apart from being known for your desserts, we've also enjoyed seeing you flex your savory skills in the kitchen. You know, you're playing with Japanese ingredients and Scando technique mixed with contemporary Australian food, leaning on your Indonesian culture. And lately, you've been smashing experimenting with ramen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've been seeing that as well as probably a lot of people that follow you. What is it about ramen and Japanese food as a whole that excites you the most?
Well, I'll probably give this a little slip. I want to open up a ramen place.
Dude.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right?
Sick.
I told someone about this. It's like...
I'm not surprised. I thought you would have... I thought that's what you were doing.
People laughed at me.
I actually thought that's what you were doing.
I'm planning to, probably like sometime next year. I want it to be unique. I want something that's actually, when you go in there, it's like Japan. That's what I want it to be.
Count me as your first customer.
You go to Japan, it's not big, right? You go to one place, it's like 20 seaters max.
Yeah.
Or even 10 seaters, the best ones.
Yeah.
I wanted an 8-seater.
I had ramen like...
Amazing.
I'm not joking, like 2-3 times a day.
Yeah.
This is going to probably kill everyone's, bust everyone's, you know, I don't know, whatever they think, but 7-Eleven.
Yes, did you have the Michelin star? Yeah, oh my God. You bring it here, it's the best one in Sydney.
I'm telling you.
It's insane. It blew my mind.
Anthony Bourdain and all these other people that I was listening to go to the 7-Eleven.
And get the
ramen.
Yeah,
The Michelin star ramen.
Oh, wow.
And I lost my lid.
Yeah.
My wife and I dropped our stuff and then... But anyway, the ramen.
I was mind blown.
So what is it about the ramen... Is it the...
It's comfort.
Yeah.
It's comfort. And I miss Japan. I love Japan. Like, I went there...
It's good,
twice last year, and I plan to go twice again this year.
Japan's awesome.
It's just amazing. I've got so much to explore.
Okay.
I only went to Tokyo, so I've got a lot of places to go. The beef, the everything produce. So, for me, ramen...
Yeah.
It's comfort.
Yeah. It so is.
Yeah.
Dude.
And I feel like here...
I'm with you.
Like, you know, there's a lot of good ramen places here too, but... Of course, hard truth, it's not as good as Japan.
Agreed. I can't find one.
Yeah, no, you can't. I just experimented and I just wanted to have fun. I was like, you know, I just looked at YouTube. I just did a lot of studying. I was like dreaming about ramen as well.
Have you seen Ivan Ramen's episode?
Yeah, of course I have.
Mate, I couldn't stop thinking about ramen for like 2 weeks after watching. That's on Chef's Table.
Yeah.
Ivan Ramen,
amazing.
Check it out.
Amazing episode.
That must have inspired you big time.
I watched it again.
So good. All right.
My brother laughed at me. A few people did as well.
That's kind of the good sign to do it.
Yeah.
When people go, that's ridiculous, mate.
When I made it, I gave it to my brother. And they're all teasing me as well still. I sat down, it's like, actually, I look pretty good. He ate it. And I know when it's good is when he doesn't say much about it.
Yeah.
Usually he'd give me a lot of shit saying, like, you know, this is crap or blah, blah. But this time it was like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's quite tasty.
Yes.
Okay.
There's promise.
Yeah. That means I know that it's good.
I mean,
and I asked him, would you give it out of 10? Maybe an 8, which is good. I'm pretty happy with an 8.
Mate.
Yeah, for a first try.
8's good.
Yeah.
What on earth? For a first try.
And we've been going eating, my brother and I have been eating ramen places a lot. So.
That's loving
pretty
it.
Good.
Mate, so exciting. So exciting. I can't wait. I hope you do
yeah, next
do that.
Year, for sure.
That's going to be
for
sick. Sure. So we're going to wind up a few more questions, mate. So I'm conscious of time, but a question I ask all my guests, if you could travel back in time for 30 seconds and speak to Junior Reynold, perhaps the youngster finishing high school, what would you tell him?
Well, there's two things I would say.
Okay.
One, invest in Bitcoin and then get out.
Agreed.
And the other one would be just work.
Yeah.
Get into working in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get experience. That's about it.
Don't delay.
No, don't delay.
Who has been an impactful giant thinker in your life, that person who has inspired you to think bigger and dig deeper in helping you reach your full potential?
I'd say it's...
You can speak to more than one, two, three people if you want.
Person that started got me started cooking would be Grant Achatz from Alinea.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he got me, because I got his book and I looked at it, it's like, wow, this is not the food that I read in magazines. This is different.
Wow.
It's not the food I see on TV. This is bloody art.
Hey, yeah, so good.
It's you know, manipulating ingredients. And another one would be, I guess, a couple of friends that I've met just, you know, towards late last year. Just their perspective and their ideas of business and look on the world is unique. And these guys are very successful, high-profile guys. And just having a chat with them, just picking their brain a little bit, really inspired me.
So good.
Yeah.
And of course, your mum, no doubt.
Oh, of course.
That's a given.
Yeah.
So what's next for you, Reynold, with everything you're involved in for the rest of the year and beyond?
For the rest of the year, we're hoping to, I guess, expand the business a bit more, yeah. Not just Koi. Monkey's Corner. We've got a little cafe called Mischief that's coming up as well. It's
right.
A bakehouse. It's something a bit more, you know, more homey.
Where's that?
It's going to be in Crow's Nest. Wow. So I'll be open in July.
Dude.
Yeah. Besides that, we've got a few other little projects. So my life plan is do well in business. And then whenever I've got enough, I want to have my restaurant, which is going to be like 15-seater or 20-seater. And it's something very intimate, very unique.
Like Japan style? No.
Not Japan style. Very modern style. Yeah.
Modern.
Which is my dream restaurant. And so if you look into Linear, you look into Vespertine, it's something that I want to do here. There's nothing here.
So good. Mate, how can listeners get in touch with you online?
If there's anything, just send me a message through Instagram or...
Instagram, eh?
Well, actually, I don't even reply as well. Email. Email's best.
Email's best.
Yeah, people don't realize there's an email button there.
Totally.
It's like, hey, what's your email? What's your email? It's like, just click the email there.
On your profile.
Yeah.
What's your Instagram handle again?
Just for the Reynold. At Reynold, P-O-E-R.
P-O-E-R. Reynold, thank you so much, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Ram.
Having you on the show. I'm sure the listeners are going to be straight in their kitchen now, whether you want to be a chef or not.
I'll grab a dessert.
I'll grab a dessert from Koi or try Monkey's Corner if you can get a booking. Mate, thanks again, and I will no doubt see you around the traps.
Appreciate it. Cheers, man.
Thank you so much for listening, Giants. I hope Reynold has given you plenty to think about and act on. Please share this episode with anyone you think would benefit. Since 2015, it's been my personal mission through this podcast to interview the world's best experts for all of us to learn from. As you all know, I'm a massive advocate for designing better designers, creatives, and entrepreneurs. The more we have, the more problem solvers we have too. You can forward giantthinkers.com to anyone and it'll take them right to it. Also, the Giant Thinkers podcast is now available on Spotify in addition to iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your preferred podcast apps. Now, a quick teaser for our next guest. She is one of Australia's greatest ever Olympians, a 3-time Olympic gold medalist and 5-time world record holder. She is a powerhouse entrepreneur, mentor, and international speaker, among many other things. And she lives by the motto, be the best you can be. And she's not afraid to set massive goals. She's also won Celebrity Apprentice Australia, co-authored her own book, The Art of Wellness, launched her first food business, Racer Rice, is a ambassador for a number of well-known international brands and is also working on business ventures in India, China, and the United States. So stay tuned for that one. For any questions regarding the podcast or anything at all, the best way to reach me is on Instagram. Please send me a DM. I'd love to hear from you. My handle is TheGiantThinker. Lastly, I'll leave you with a quote that I loved from Reynold, who said, if you have the heart for it, and if you focus, you can go anywhere.